Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good afternoon, all. Thank you for joining us here for our COVID-19 update for December 2nd. Appreciate you once again being here as we provide important information to the public on the outbreak of COVID-19, of course, the pandemic and the impact it's having and what we are doing to protect the public's health and safety. And once again, I always thank everyone for their participation in following the protocols that have been put in place. We know it's not easy. This is definitely a year we will always remember about the actions that had to be taken, but they've all been taken to protect the public's health. When we put on a mask, we put on a mask not only to protect ourselves, but our loved ones and the people that we're around. This is all about protecting the public's health, and we must never forget that. So we'll jump right in. As of November 30th, there were 26,159 cases in Erie County. That goes back to the first case in March. Unfortunately, through November 28th, our Department of Health epidemiological staff has confirmed that 811 individuals have died. We continue, unfortunately, to see increases, and we have seen multiple deaths in hospitals, as we'll get into a little bit later, in the last few days. Some of the highest numbers of deaths we've seen in months. Our epidemiological staff is still confirming whether those individuals are Erie County residents. We believe the vast majority of them are, but maybe not all of them. So we'll have an updated number on overall deaths in the next couple of days. On November 30th, there were 432 individuals admitted to Western New York hospitals who were COVID-19 positive. And 368 of those individuals were in Erie County hospitals. Those are both, once again, the highest numbers ever. We continue to break that record on a daily basis. And unfortunately, there doesn't appear to be any end in sight with regards to that. Of the 368 people that were hospitalized with COVID-19 in Erie County hospitals on the 30th, 61 of those patients were in the intensive care units, 35 had an airway assist, and unfortunately, 8 died on the 30th in the hospital. So once again, here are the statistics for November 30th. There were 704 new cases reported as of November 30th, so these are the results we announced last night. Out of 8,917 tests, for a daily positivity rate of 7.9%. The 7-day average has been creeping up. It's now up to 7.3%. So it is not going in the correct direction, which we want to see going down. Cases confirmed by zip code and positivity rates. We, of course, talk about positivity rates as a overall for our county. We also talk about rates per 100,000. But we wanted to show that, unfortunately, some of the highest positivity rates were in areas that have not had a lot of cases necessarily in the past. And for the week that ended November 28th, the zip code representing primarily the town of Wales had the highest positivity rate with 18 new cases out of the ones that were tested for a positivity rate of 17%. It's one of the highest positivity rates we've seen in any week in the past couple months. Followed by Irving. Down by the Seneca Nation, then Marilla. So you see some rural areas leading the top with the highest positivity rates. Black Rock Riverside, this has been an area of concern in the past, and we were very disappointed to see the spike with the 14207 zip code in the city of Buffalo, over 11%. So you'll see that the vast majority of these are suburban or rural. There is a 14202, the city of Buffalo in downtown also, which has a very high rate of over 10%. There's not a lot of people. Often you see in areas where you don't have a lot of people, if you get a big uptick in cases, you will also then see big upticks in positivity rates. So we are, of course, continuing to monitor that on a weekly basis, and we will continue to provide that information to the public. We have some additional case data from our epidemiologists and contact tracers, which, once again, there's consistent and persistent community spread in the entire region. In the top 10 zip codes for raw cases, we determined that approximately 20 to 35% of those cases in the top 10 zip codes had were households. So the cases were spread in households, 20 to 35% of them, which is family spread. So as we said, if a mother or father catches it, they can easily pass it on to the spouse, they can pass it on to the children. If their grandparents or their parents live with them, there's a greater chance that they'll pass it on to the parents. So up to one-third of the cases in the top 10 raw data zip codes with the highest number of new cases generally shows not just community spread, but family spread, household spread. So once again, we're not telling you necessarily to wear a mask in your house when you're with your family, but you need to understand if you're out in public and you're around other people who don't wear masks, there's a chance you could catch it and then spread it to your own family member. And this is our big worry with regards to seeing Thanksgiving cases. I can tell you we have already started to receive our first cases of individuals we believe who caught COVID-19 during a Thanksgiving celebration with other people. We know that to be a fact from our contact tracing, which means these individuals would have attended a Thanksgiving celebration and in all likelihood gotten sick by Saturday or Sunday to have been tested and us get the results and the information back from our epidemiological and contact tracing staff that they appear to have caught it at a Thanksgiving dinner. We expect the big spike to actually occur in the next 5 to 7 days, but we are already starting to see the cases. And here's something that is, I think, very important. We do testing of symptomatic individuals and close contacts at our Erie County Department of Health rapid sites. And last week, 20% of all symptomatic individuals were positive. That means 80% who came in with symptoms that looked like COVID-19 were actually not. But this is one of the highest rates we've seen with regards to symptomatic individuals in quite some time. So if you use this as a good example of what's going on in the community, if there are 10 people walking around with symptoms of COVID-19, there's a good chance that two of them actually have COVID-19. And if you add it up, that means 20 out of 100. You can just keep on doing the numbers and numbers, and it just goes to show why we're seeing such rapid spread in the community, because we do believe, and this is a time in which you see a lot of illness, a lot of what would be considered the common cold, the onset of the flu. We're seeing individuals who think they may have the common cold, but they actually have COVID-19. And that's one of the reasons why it's spreading as much as it is. Once again, the chart that is breaking the roof, shooting right through the roof, the COVID hospitalizations in Erie County since the beginning, showing how high we are in the 368. Thankfully, we are not seeing the same increase with regards to the ICUs, but we are seeing a little bit of an increase lately. And as Dr. Burstein will talk a little bit more later, what we often see is the hospitalizations will follow 7 to 10 days after the individual tests positive, which is probably within 2 weeks of when the individual actually was infected. So we are seeing a direct correlation to increased hospitalizations and increased infection rates. And once again, the hospitalization data for November 30th, 35% of all patients that are COVID-19 positive are under the age of 65. There's been a 125% increase in hospitalizations in the past 2 weeks alone. And here's something that we hate to see, but we have been seeing. It's been a big increase in COVID deaths in the hospital and just in the last week. 51 individuals died in the last 7-day period, as you see from this chart here that ends on November 30th, in hospitals that were COVID-19 positive. And so once again, we offer our deepest condolences to those who've lost a loved one due to COVID-19. We're starting to see the obituaries and the remembrances of these individuals noting that they died from COVID-19. like we saw earlier in the year, and we do expect that there will be more deaths as these cases continue to rise. West New York hospitalizations and the increase by region, we like to be number one. If this was the Empire State Games, it's great when Western New York's number one, but it's not good when it's talking about the increase in hospitalizations over the last 3 weeks. So this is the one part of the Empire State Games we do not want to win a gold, silver, or bronze on. And right now, unfortunately, we're winning the gold, which is the increase in hospitalizations. We need to bring that number down just to protect the public's health, to protect our incredible healthcare heroes who've been working so hard for so long. We do not want to see the hospitals become inundated with COVID-19 patients. Unfortunately, we're kind of headed in that direction if we do not change our behavior. And that's why I think it's upon all of us, personal responsibility to do our best. Heck, I talk to my friends who've played hockey. I'd love to be able to go back out and play hockey, but I'm not playing hockey right now because I don't want to be around other individuals who might have COVID-19. And then I could take it back to others that I'm around or in the office. And truthfully, the only time I'm not wearing a mask when I'm in the office is doing the press conference or sitting at my desk alone when there's nobody else around me. We need to have that personal responsibility to fight this pandemic till we can get to a point where we can vaccinate everyone and protect all. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Burstein to talk a lot about what the Jacobs School of Medicine, Dr. Peter Winkelstein, has identified as part of their analytics work group for COVID-19, and it's not good. So let's hope that what these projections show here in this slideshow do not occur, because if they do, this is going to be a long, bad winter. Dr. Burst.
Thank you. Thank you, and good afternoon. So I have the honor of presenting some data from the UB Jacobs School of Medicine Analytics Group that is led by Dr. Peter Winkelstein, predicting where our hospitalizations may go if we either do have a strong intervention to curb the spread of infection, and what happens if we don't have any intervention and continue on our course as present. So this slide is looking at the hospitalizations of COVID-19, the hospital census, in red from the beginning of July up until this past week. And then in yellow, it's looking at our COVID-19 seven-day positivity rate in Erie County. So as the county executive mentioned, usually the hospitalization census follows the rates of COVID-19 by about 7 to 10 days. So you can see that in October, when we started to see an increase in COVID-19 rates in the community, about a week or two later, we started to see the increase in hospitalization census, and starting on the steep path that we are seeing now in red. So this is a graph looking at what the actual hospital census is in Erie County in the blue dots, and then what the projected hospital census will be according to Dr. Winkelstein's model in the yellow line. And so you can see that starting from the beginning of October until the present, the actual hospital census data, the blue dots, have pretty much been on track with what Dr. Winkelstein's model predicts in the yellow line. I want to call your attention to the first vertical line, the intervention on November 20th. So that corresponds to the day when the governor put us in Erie County in the orange, or much of Erie County in the orange zone. So that was the intervention where some of the non-essential businesses were forced to close, and we had to curtail our dining, in-person dining experiences. So you can see, as a result of the orange zone intervention, we haven't really seen much of a change. That really hasn't been enough to change around our hospital's admissions. So it is a little bit early. It's only been about a couple weeks since we have been in the orange zone. However, we have haven't really seen an effect on our inpatient admissions to the hospital in Erie County as a result of the orange zone. And so you can see that if you follow the yellow line out up and through January, we will, if we don't do anything more than we're doing now, we're going to quadruple the hospital census, the number of people admitted to our hospitals in Erie County will quadruple. So this graph is looking at the same data. Again, the actual hospital census in Erie County in the blue dots and the projected hospital census in the yellow line. And so you can see in this graph, the second of vertical line corresponds to if the governor were to place Erie County in some type of emergency stop, a pause, where all non-essential businesses were shut down, just like we experienced over the spring, what we would see is that over the course of a couple weeks, we would finally see a decrease in hospitalization. So this looks like, really our last resort, are the only intervention that really may change around our growing and mushrooming hospital admissions is by putting even more businesses on a pause and unfortunately temporarily closing down more non-essential businesses so that people won't be going out as much and they won't be congregating in places, and people will realize that this is really serious, and hopefully people will stay home, not only because that there won't be as many places to go out because the non-essential businesses will be closed, but also because it'll affect them personally, and people will realize that this is really serious. And it is terrible that businesses may have to close, and I know it will be financially devastating. It's also terrible of all the severe illness we're seeing with these people being hospitalized and all the deaths that we've seen in our community. And we may have to make some very difficult choices in the near future to avoid this escalation in number of cases and number of hospital admissions. So just moving on to Erie County testing. So the Erie County Health Department, as County Executive alluded to, is offering COVID-19 testing for people who have symptoms and then also for close contacts or whether they have symptoms or not. So all Erie County residents that are meet one of these criteria can call our hotline at 716-858-2929 to schedule an appointment. So if individuals are calling to get tested because they were traveling or because they are just worried about their status or they want to get tested for school, that does not meet our criteria, and so you'll have to look somewhere else for a test. However, we know that there are 40 or 50,000 tests done in Erie County every week for the past few weeks, so we know that there is a lot of testing available, and you can see that at our COVID-19 website and our COVID-19 interactive test map. So again, you don't need any type of doctor's order, you don't need insurance, all you need is an appointment, and please show up, because we are filling up very quickly on appointments, and then when people show up, you really take the space of somebody who otherwise would have really loved to be tested. So we're going to talk about how Erie County is responding to our COVID-19 pandemic. And first of all, I want to talk about testing in the schools. So Erie County, with our newly acquired Division of Emergency Medical Services limited service license, we are able to share that limited service license, or LSL, with Erie County schools in the community that offer education to kids between the age grades of pre-K to grade 12. So we're just asking them to sign a memorandum of understanding, which they will attest. They will confirm that they have everything they need to run a good, strong, solid, confidential, safe testing program, and all their operations will be in place to run a good testing program. So far, just since we released this at the beginning of the week, we've had four public school districts, which are actually pretty big, and three private schools that have already returned that memorandums of understanding signed, and we have more that have contacted us and let letting us know that they will be submitting a signed memorandum of understanding. So we are so excited that we can help the schools stay open. As again, I'm a pediatrician, and the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommends that schools should stay open if it's safe. We've already proven that they're really not seeing, we're seeing very little transmission within the schools, especially very little transmission among students. So we feel that this is a safe place for students, and Erie County wants to help the schools stay open. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our county executive.
Thank you, Dr. Burstein. We just want to highlight that the blood donations are desperately needed. Connect Life and the American Red Cross have both reached out to us and asked us, and that's why we're talking about it right now. If people are blood donors, then now is the time to donate blood. They're starting to get a little short on their supply. So you can see the information on the screen regarding Connect Life. You can call Connect Life at 716-529-4270. They also have a website at connectlife.org, or you can go to the American Red Cross at redcrossblood.org and sign up to be a blood donor at a time when, unfortunately, there's a lot of need in the community for blood. Shop 716 e-gift card, we want to talk a little bit about this. It's been a great program since we announced it. I know over $800,000 in e-gift cards have been purchased, which is more than $400,000 through the county, and another gift card that would be provided depending on the dollar value. So we have until supplies last. You can buy one gift card for $25, and you can get a free $25 gift card as a result of that. And that is the free gift card must be used by the end of the month because it's part of the CARES Act funding. And there are hundreds of shops across our region, all locally owned and operated, in which you can use the gift card. So why not spend $25 to get $50? You can buy some of your holiday presents with it. You could share the gift card. Hey, the gift card could be a gift you could give somebody for the holiday. But we want people to understand we're running very low on the buy one, get one frees. We expect to actually run out of those in the next 4 or 5 days. And then the gift card program will still exist, but there will be no buy one, get one free anymore. So if you want to get the buy one, get one free, buy $25 or more of a gift card, get a free $25 gift card, we need you to do it now. And then finally, before open up the questions, do want to remind all the applicants for the Live Well Erie CARES Act Rental and Mortgage Assistance Program. You must complete your application to receive assistance. We have already paid out through the program to many individuals to help them with their rental and mortgage needs. This is a very, very unique program. Not a lot of places in the United States have it, but we have it here. We know people have been lost revenue, lost jobs, are at risk of losing their home, whether it's something they rent or own because of the pandemic. We want people to stay in their homes, so we offer assistance to do that. More than 4,000 people applied, 90% of them for rental assistance, 10% for mortgage assistance. However, not everybody, when they applied, provided all the information they need to ensure that their application would be approved. So 211 is sending out email and text messages to applicants to get their further verification documents. The Buffalo Community Centers, many of them, you can go into a community center and talk to a partner who will assist you in completing your application. You need to do it now. We have to wrap up and get all the money out of this program within 10 days to 2 weeks at most. So if you haven't done it and you're thinking, oh, I'll do it on the 25th or 26th, it's going to be too late. We need you to do it now so that we can assist you and help pay for your rent and your mortgage. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to help you at all. Once again, I just want to remind everybody what we're doing in our community as a whole and as a country is to protect the public's health. It's to protect the safety of our community. It's to protect the safety and health of our loved ones. I know that others may sometimes object to some of the actions that are taken, but the protocols that have been put in place are based on the science. It's as simple as that. There is no question to the science. We know how COVID-19 is transmitted. We know how this pandemic has resulted into the worst thing that we've basically seen in any of our lives. And we need everyone to do what's best for the community. This is not political. This is about the public's health and welfare. If you don't believe me, believe Dr. Burstein. believe the doctors, nurses, and other support staff over at our area hospitals that are starting to see a huge influx of cases of individuals that have COVID-19. If you don't believe me, believe the loved ones of those who've lost someone as a result of COVID-19. Talk to them and tell them what it's going to feel like, or what it would feel like in your family if you lost a loved one to an illness that you can prevent somebody from catching if we act appropriately. So please, everyone, just remember, we are all in this together. As I've said before, we are all our brothers and sisters' keeper. And if we do this correctly, we're going to be able to get through this as best as possible until such time as a vaccine can be provided and we vaccinate the greater community. Until then, we still need to wear our masks. We still need to socially distance. We still need to wash our hands more than we probably ever washed our hands before. And if we do that, we'll protect the loved ones and other people around us so that they can go on and live their lives as best as possible and our community can be as strong as possible. With that, I am going to turn up the microphone here. We will start from the bottom because I believe I started from the top last time, which was television, so we'll start from the bottom. I know we have a representative from the Associated Press, so questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. County Executive. One question deals with what seems to be this growing non-compliance, non-enforcement movement in Erie County. You know, been very widely reported, you know, without with Athletes Unleashed, the non-compliance event there. Sheriff Tim Howard, you know, not enforcing the 10-person limit during Thanksgiving. We hear today, you know, the county controller really substantially slow walking the ability of the county to impose fines. And then just last week, they're kind of getting cover, I think they really are getting cover, from the Supreme Court and the decision that they issued that really undercuts what appears to be the legal authority to have these types of mandates, that 1905 decision that the governor relies on. I wanted to get your thoughts on that and just ask, you know, how might the county deal with that? Are there any arrows in your quiver that you plan to deploy to address that type of thing?
The question, for those who didn't hear, actually the reporter cameraman is in the room, one of the only ones, is in regards to compliance and what we feel is the a growing group of individuals with regards to noncompliance and what we can do to ensure that we protect the general public and their wealth and their health. I think it's fair to say the vast majority of the public, including business owners, understand the situation we're in and are compliant with the protocols. There is a very vocal minority that is not. And the problem is that very vocal minority is part of the reason why we see a continued increase with regards to our cases and our hospitalizations. If 80 to 90% of the public is acting appropriately, but 10 to 20% is not, and they're gathering in groups and they're not wearing masks, they're getting sick. We know there are people who don't like wearing masks who are getting sick and being hospitalized and unfortunately dying. I commented earlier today about what the comptroller did. As the former county comptroller, who actually was in office when the reforms were passed in 2006, I know what those powers are in our relation to. And as the county comptroller, I learned very quickly that you are not a policymaker. You are basically ministerial in nature. You perform a function, and other than basically being the county's auditor, everything else is ministerial in nature. You collect the checks, you process and send out the bills on behalf of Erie County, but you don't make the determination as to the dollar amounts of fines. You don't make the determination on how those fines are to be paid. You just collect them. And what the comptroller did earlier today actually is very reckless, because he even threatened to freeze the bank accounts of the Department of Health, the bank accounts that are used to hire contract nurses to help us with contact tracing, the bank accounts that are used to purchase goods and PPE as they come in to protect our staff and our public. All I can say is he's more interested in trying to prove a political point than he is protecting the public's health. And we need everyone together to do this. This is not political. Last week I had a good press conference with members of the opposing party from across the country, Democrats and Republicans, coming together and saying this is not political, this is about protecting the public's health. And to all of those who think that this is just a joke, All you got to do is look at the obituary page and see the increased number of individuals who are dying in our community. We don't know exactly how every individual caught it, but we have a pretty good notion on some of those cases. And it's often in a community spread situation, and that's preventable. So to all of those out there who think that this is about subjugation of rights, it's not. It's about protecting the public's health so that we can get to a point where we have a vaccine, provide the vaccine to everyone in our community so that we can cut down on further cases, hospitalizations, and eventual deaths from COVID-19. Is there anybody on from B News? Western New York Media? Any from Western New York Media? If not, Brendan from WBEN, you're next.
Hey, Mark. Just curious about the 170,000.
Oops.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, Brendan. You said 170,000, okay. And that was it.
Yeah, 170,000 doses coming to New York. Do you guys know how many? Do you have any idea how many will be coming to Western New York, Erie County specifically?
I do not know at this point. We did hear that nursing homes were going to be some of the first recipients. I know that there's more than 4,000 residents in nursing homes in Erie County at this point right now. But we also understand that hospitals are going to be some of the first recipients, and there are some very large hospital populations, not just in Erie County, but across New York. So we did get notice, as most people did. We got it a little earlier from the state that they were expecting 170,000 with the first batch. I don't know exactly the date in which it would be received and the total amount that would be received in Erie County. We do know it would go to these healthcare areas first before it would go to others, but I'm waiting for more information on that. WBFO, anybody on from BFO? If not, we'll go to the Buffalo News, Maki Becker and Sandra Tan.
Hi, this is Maki speaking. I wanted to ask about those projections that Dr. Burstein was talking about. So I wanted to understand that correctly, that if we stay at orange, we're still going to quadruple our numbers?
That's not exactly correct. It's not so much the orange. It's about no change in behavior. Yeah, we need a change in behavior if have to do greater protocol lockdowns, which none of us want to see, and that's one of the things we've been trying to avoid. Because we haven't, since we did the orange, we haven't seen a tremendous reduction in new cases. They have plateaued from a standpoint of the positivity rate. They haven't shot up at the same exponential rate they were. And I'll turn it over to Dr. Burstein, but I believe Dr. Winkelstein's model projects that if we don't change behavior, so to speak, we're going to continue to see lots of cases. And we know if we continue to get lots of cases, eventually there's going to be a certain percentage of them that are hospitalizations and a certain percentage of them that eventually end up as deaths. But I'll let Dr. Burstein finish that. It's not saying we have to go into a shutdown. What we need to do is in some ways change our behavior.
Thank you. As the county executive mentioned, that this graph is looking at if we don't change our behavior and we keep doing what we're doing, the yellow line is looking at the projected hospital census through the end of January, shows that we anticipate that we will quadruple the number of admissions. If we are able to change our behavior, and our experience with dramatically changing our behavior in the past has been with a lockdown, then we will be able to eventually start to seeing a decrease in behavior. I mean, hopefully it won't take a lockdown to change our behavior. Unfortunately, our experience has been that was really the key to be able to change our community's behavior and bring down our numbers. But we need to do something radical very, very soon to inspire people to dramatically change their behavior, or else we'll be going down a path that we really don't want to go down. Thank you.
So, what would that be? Does that mean, like, everybody wearing masks? If you're outside, does that mean, instead of being forced to do it, you know, are there things that you would recommend right now? Like, what should we be doing then?
Right. Well, we've been saying it all along. So not only wearing masks, Avoiding any type of gatherings, not just large gatherings, but also small gatherings. Like, don't invite people over to watch the Bills game. Don't go out to to other people's houses for dinner or to play cards. You know, do it. You know, play virtual games. Making sure that people try to stay at home when you go shopping. Order online. Don't go into the stores where there are other people. Get your 716 gift cards. I got a couple, and I've been doing some really fun shopping. So that's again, it's a multi-pronged approach. So again, limiting your contact to anybody outside your house, and if you do go out, make sure that you're wearing a mask. But just limiting any type of gatherings, and not just large gatherings, but small gatherings. Is very, very important. And if you feel sick, don't go out. Don't go to work. Don't go to school. Don't send your kids to school. If you feel sick, we've seen just from this past week, from our rapid testing data, that there is at least a 1 out of 5 chance that if you have any type of respiratory symptoms, even mild, that you could have COVID-19. And we're seeing people go out into the community, to the workplace, like, and excuses like, oh, my allergies are asking up, or, oh, I always get this hay fever this time of year, and making excuses, and then they ended up becoming positive with COVID-19 and exposing all their friends. And remember, getting a negative test is not going to it's not going to help us escape COVID-19. We can't test our way out of it. The test just tells you at the point of time when the specimen was collection that we could not detect the virus with either an antigen, a protein, or the RNA at the time that the specimen was collected. It doesn't mean you weren't infected at the time. It doesn't mean that you won't get infected the next day. So you have a false sense of security with a negative test. So the best thing to do is don't go out. Don't go out and see your friends. Just stay at home. And especially if you feel sick, don't go to work, don't go outside, don't go shopping, just even don't come in contact with your other family. This is a multi-pronged approach that we have to take. I'll turn it over to the county executive.
Thank you, Dr. Burstein. Once again, we're just trying to remind everybody we are trying to avoid the shutdowns and the lockdowns. That is the key. We are trying to do it. And the best way to do that is to reduce the spread of the coronavirus, to stop this pandemic from growing. And so that's why I talk about how it's in our hands. It's personal responsibility, and we need to address our own behavior. As I said, there's things I'd like to be doing right now that I can't. And I could, I guess, but I won't, because I don't want to potentially come in contact with other individuals I haven't been around. Catching the coronavirus from them, COVID-19, or for that matter, if I have it and don't know it, and passing it on to them. So that's why we're all doing this. We're taking these actions to protect the general public, to save as many people as possible, and to get us back as quickly as possible. I think that's what people forget, especially those who are protesting, is that you want us to open up. Well, we will be able to open up quicker if we can reduce the spread now. This continues, and we're like this for the foreseeable future or worse, we're only headed towards worse situations, and none of us want to be in that position. So let's exercise some personal responsibility and be the best that we can to protect not just ourselves and our family, but the greater community. Spectrum News, Ryan Whalen.
Hi, Mark. Just with the controller threatening to freeze the accounts of the health department if it continues to collect deposit fines. Is the health department going to continue to collect deposit cash checks?
Yes. Yes.
Even with that threat out there?
Yes. It's a toothless threat. He doesn't have the power to do that. First off, he has no power to tell the health department what it can and cannot do. He has roles as the controller, as I talked about. I was the controller, so I understand those roles, and I was intimately involved in the 2006 charter changes, which gave the controller a little bit more power. But the controller is still ministerial in nature. The policymakers for Erie County are the executive branch and the legislative. And the controller is basically the bean counter. They collect the money, they send out the bills, They do have auditing powers that other partners don't, but they are not a policymaker, and what the comptroller is pledging to do would actually threaten the general public, because if you froze the bank accounts, we would not be able to utilize that for our purposes, such as I talked about hiring of independent parties to be contact tracers, the purchase of additional PPE, some of the other contracts that the health department has that in which we are required to pay out through their health department. I have to admit, I was, from a governmental standpoint and the knowledge that I have of the Erie County's charter, the comptroller's office and its responsibilities, I was shocked by what the comptroller said. From a PR standpoint, I was not. He's using every opportunity he can to get his face in the press. And he is actually putting the public at risk at a time when we should be coming together. I don't care if he was a Democrat or a Republican. I'd be out there saying this is wrong, and he doesn't have the power to do it. And we will take all measures necessary to enforce the law if he attempts to go above and beyond the powers that are designated to him by Erie County's charter. WGRZ Channel 2, is anyone on?
Yes, Mark, can you hear me?
Yes, I think it's Ron Plants, correct?
Yes, it is, Mark. Hi.
Hi, Ron.
Mark, I know you will probably cite HIPAA law on this, but this is a matter of public safety and a concern for the public at large. We are hearing that members of the Erie County Health Department, possibly those who are in the headquarters behind ECMC, including sanitarians, may have been infected with COVID, and that there could possibly even have been a death of a health sanitarian. Is that true or not?
Well, I can't talk about any individual case, but we can talk about generalities. I will turn it over to Dr. Burstein, who I think is ready to talk about this. We do not believe that there's any risk to the general public. There have been, unfortunately, in our situation in the past, deaths associated with COVID-19 in the general community. And we just recently had a death of a departmental individual from the Department of Health. And we certainly mourn any loss associated with our county workforce, regardless of how they may have died, even if we can't necessarily confirm the rationale behind it. But I'll turn it over to Dr. Burstein. We have no reason to believe that there's any risk to the general public. And she can talk a little bit more about the particulars that you are referencing, Ron.
Thank you. So, unfortunately, the Erie County Health Departments and I think all departments in the county have experienced some staff falling ill with COVID-19. I mean, it's pervasive in our community, and so it would be not unexpected that you see it in every workplace, and including in county government. I can tell you at the Erie County Health Department, we are very aggressive. If we suspect a case of COVID-19 among our workers, fortunately, we have access to testing because we run a public health lab and we have rapid testing kits available to us. So we are very aggressive about testing all our county staff that has any type of symptoms, that may be a close contact. We are very aggressive about making sure that people who are sick do not come to work. And if they do, they are subject to some severe discipline. We make sure that anybody in Erie County that is a close contact to a case will also be sent home and put in quarantine if they're not essential, and have the opportunity to test. The county is clearing out the house. We are sending as many workers home as we can to work at home. And we are being very aggressive about controlling the spread of COVID-19, not only in the health department, but through all Erie County departments. Unfortunately, again, it's something we're seeing in our community, and we are taking as many steps as possible to make sure that that the community stays safe, including having a safe environment. If we have, sometimes we do have some of our county staff that does have to go out in the community for scene investigators or sanitarians. So anybody that has, of course, who is sick with any symptoms or who has been exposed to COVID-19 and is in quarantine is not going out. We are not extending people into the community that could have been exposed to COVID-19. Even if they're asymptomatic or if their tests have been negative, we keep them in quarantine for the duration of the 14 days, and we are not sending people out to the community to what could possibly have been exposed. So we take this very, very seriously, and we are ensuring, doing everything in our power, that we do not spread COVID-19 in our workplace and do not spread COVID-19 in the community. Thanks. I'll turn it over to the county executive.
Thank you, Doctor. I would just echo once again what the doctor said. We take this all very seriously. The protection of our staff is paramount. And we certainly have dealt with issues with it. We're not going to deny that there's been staff members who've tested COVID-19. We've talked about it actually previously and how we've had staff members who were sick and were coming in that should have known better and tested positive afterwards and found out that they were COVID-19 positive. And that's why we keep on telling anyone, regardless of where you are, who you are, where you work, we would hope if you're an Erie County staff member, you would understand that if you're sick, you shouldn't go in because we can test you. And we take the safety and the security and the livelihood of our employees just the same as we do the general public. We want to protect you all. Channel 4, WIVB-TV.
Hi, Mark.
Hello. Hello, are you there?
Mark, it's Dan Talbach.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. It is my understanding that due to the COVID outbreak at the health department facility by the hospital, it's resulted in a complete halt of all your inspections, including COVID inspections. Is that accurate?
Well, I wouldn't go to the point of saying an outbreak at the health department. We are in the process of reviewing everything and ensuring the safety of the citizens as well as our staff.
Have COVID inspections, all inspections been suspended?
I don't know at this moment. You want to? Dr. Burstein can talk more about it.
Okay.
So there, we are continuing with our COVID-19 work. We are following up on complaints by phone. We're also able to do outside inspections of, say, for lead or for businesses, making sure that they're closed. So again, anybody who has been exposed to COVID-19 is not going out in the community, and if they have to do those type of investigations, either by phone or outdoors inspection, that's what will happen. But our COVID-19 is not stopping. We are we take this very, very seriously, and we are continuing to make sure that our community stays safe with COVID-19. Thank you.
But it's like almost half your sanitarians have got to get tested, if not more. And I was specifically informed that these were suspended for at least a week.
Well, I'm the health commissioner, and I make the policies, and I can assure you that regardless of people getting tested or not, I'm not going to talk about specifics in my department. As I said, in general, people who have been exposed to COVID-19 in the health department and throughout Erie County are aggressively encouraged to get tested, are placed in quarantine. If they're non-essential workers, if they're close contacts, they're definitely placed in quarantine. And we are not sending anybody out in the community that could have been exposed to COVID-19. So that is the same policy, whether it's with our public health sanitarians, whether it's with our epidemiologists, whether it's with our medical examiners, our first responders. This is a policy that we have with every single department, every single division in the health department and throughout the county. So we're carrying on with this policy. Thank you.
How many sanitarians are in quarantine?
Thank you. We'll move on to Madison Carter from WKBW.
Mark. Question, all of our conversations over the past week or so have been you saying the state's going to wait to see whether we have this spike over Thanksgiving, but a couple times today you've mentioned, and Dr. Burstyn, you've mentioned that we need some really drastic measures here. We haven't seen much of the needle moving, even with the orange zone. So have you considered, or would you consider putting additional restrictions in place at the local level, even ahead of the state?
Well, once again, I say this is also dependent upon our behavior. We can avoid going to a further restrictions if we act better amongst ourselves. Say the vast majority of people, I think, are. But I also, it doesn't take a genius to see the increased amount of individuals just on the roads from what it was earlier this year. So we're very worried about people going to a little holiday get-togethers at households, just like some people did for Thanksgiving. I talked to the governor yesterday. We talked, myself, with some of his senior staff. I asked him specifically with regards to the red zone, and the same answer that you've heard from the governor is they're going to take a little bit more time to see what kind of spike, if any, does exist from Thanksgiving. We don't know. We do know we received some of the first cases from Thanksgiving. And in regards to how we go about it, it's in the people's hands. It really is in the hands of the public. They have an opportunity to help our community prevent the further spread of COVID-19 and reduce the pandemic by just not sharing the illness by going out and doing things where they're more at risk. So if we can get the public to act appropriately and be and follow the protocols that exist to protect public's health, I think we'll be in a better place. As I said, we're waiting to see that number with regards to cases. We know there's a certain correlation between cases and hospitalizations. And if we continue to see a big jump in cases, well, then I think there's a distinct possibility that you could see further restrictions put in place, though nobody really wants to do it. That's why I'm hopeful the public will act appropriately. And once again, I thank those who have. 80% of you have. I know that. And even those that are disgruntled about wearing the mask, you usually put the mask on when you're out in public. That's good. The question is, what happens when you go to your friend Joe's house? What happens when you go over and you play cards with your cousins that you haven't seen in a few months? How do you know that they're not COVID-19 positive? You don't. And those are how a lot of these cases are being transmitted, is through these small gatherings. Though we know that it can basically be transmitted anywhere. And that's why certain restrictions have been put in place. We want to avoid the red zone at all possibility, because then all non-essential businesses are closed. It's as simple as that. I think we have a few more around for questions, or any more questions from the Associated Press.
Yeah, I do have one quick follow-up. So you were addressing earlier Control Mihailu's attempts, you know, once again to slow off the fines. You had said there were some legal avenues available to halt that. I was wondering if you could just talk a bit more about that. What avenues do you believe are available to stop him from progressing this effort?
Questions in regards to the controller's actions and his extra legal actions, what avenues do we have? We have avenues that could be going to the courts. Certainly have had to use it before when it appears that there were improper actions. Don't like doing it, but if we have to, I wasn't just a comptroller, I also practiced law. I played a role in writing some of the last charters. I know pretty good what the law is and why some of the things were done. And I know the actions that the comptroller has threatened to take are above and beyond his authority as comptroller to do. Once again, his office is ministerial in nature. It is not a policymaker. If he wants to be a policymaker, he should run for county executive or one of the legislative seats. Those are the policymakers. The comptroller is a key position because it gives you an independent set of eyes regarding the books with Erie County, but that's what the responsibility is. It's the person to ensure that the finances are on the up and up, to ensure that the financial statements are done properly, to issue bond debt, to do the collections on behalf of the county, but the departments make the determination. For example, what if the DA did a fine against an individual and a court imposed the fine and the comptroller says, you know, I don't think that fine was appropriate, I'm going to ignore it. The comptroller does not have the power to do that for the district attorney, just like the comptroller does not have the power to do that against the health department. And if he wants to be a policymaker, he should run for a policy-making office. WBEN, Brendan Keeney. Okay, anybody from BFO? One last time. Buffalo News, I think Sandra there. Didn't get a question in the first round.
I did have a question. Just changing the subject slightly, the Erie County Legislature majority is pushing forward a $3.8 million budget amendment package tomorrow that would earmark more money for Democratic districts and cities than in past years. The Minority Caucus is saying that this is irresponsible when we're coming out of a budget year that's seen a deficit reduction plan. Are you intending to support a budget package with the Democratic amendment if that's what's approved tomorrow?
If what was put down yesterday is a final package, I've talked to Legislative Chair Baskin. I do support it. It actually would reduce the tax rate even greater than what I had proposed. So any questions that this is putting more pork in there, so to speak, is false, because it's actually reducing the budget slightly from what my office had proposed. There's always negotiations that go on. As I said, there's policymakers in government, and when it comes to Erie County, and it's the county executive's office, the administration, and the legislature. The legislature has its crack at the bite at the apple, so to speak, with regards to the budget after I propose it. But the proposal that was put on the table yesterday, the dollar amounts, there did not appear to be anything that I would veto. So if that passed as is, I would assume that that would be, if it does pass as is, then I'm going to sign it and have no problems with it. If there are additional additions that are put in, they would, of course, be subject to veto, but they have to be approved by the legislature on a line item basis. So I would have to take a look and see what they did. But getting back to your original question, the proposal that was laid on the table yesterday by the Democratic caucus is one that, if that is the final budget that's passed, I approve it. I will not veto it.
Okay. I think the Minority Caucus was hoping that there would be more support for small businesses and restaurants, especially given how popular the Best Business Program was. What do you think of that?
Well, I would say this is what we proved with regards to the Back to Business program is that the federal government needs to come up and step up to the plate and do another round of PPP, the Payroll Protection Program, or whatever they want to call it. The federal government needs to step up and do its share for not only local businesses, small businesses, but they need to do it for governments. They need to do it for hospitals. They need to do it for nursing homes. They need to do it for the states. It shouldn't be the responsibility of local governments in this situation where we have a global pandemic that is drastically impacting our entire country, in some ways worse than anywhere else, that the federal government has abdicated its authority and just said, let the locals deal with it. This is a perfect example of how the federal government needs to do this. And we were using federal dollars, the CARES Act dollars, initially for the program. There's no way, I know what the minority proposed, there's no way we'd be able to meet the need in the community even with that. So that's why the federal government needs to step up. President Trump is president through January 20th at noon. He has an ability to help our country working with Congress and the Senate to get a new package through. He needs to do that. If he doesn't do it, I know it's the number one priority for the Biden elected administration. Ryan Whalen, Spectrum. Anything else? Channel 2?
I'm here. Sorry, it took me a second to unmute there. Bottom line, whether you agree with the methods of the county controller or not, there's a lot of questions that arose because of this $15,000 potential fine that the Hamburg gym owner faces. According to the minority conference's resolution, it matched basically all the fines levied on all other business owners up to October 19th. In total. So why can't we have somebody explain to us why that fine seems to be so excessive?
Well, I would note for the record, Ryan, that New York State changed the rules with regards to fines recently. And this is New York law. The Erie County Department of Health is the duly authorized agent of New York to enforce the health code in our county, just like the same is with in regards to Niagara County. The Niagara County Health Department enforces the health code up there. What Comptroller is doing is not just thumbing his nose and saying, I don't care what the county executive, or for that matter, the health department thinks. I mean, he's saying, I'm ignoring New York law. And that's why I feel very good, because this is based on the New York law and the public health law of New York State, that if this had to go to a court, he fails. He's not a policymaker. It'd be like me telling Governor Cuomo, I don't care what you want to do, Governor Cuomo. I'm going to ignore New York state law. Well, New York state law is the supreme law of New York state subdivisions like Erie County. Well, actually, I should backtrack. The supreme law is the United States law. Then it's state law. And then you have county laws. Counties are all subdivisions of New York state. We exist because of New York state. We can't say we're going to ignore everything that New York state does and passes, because remember, it was the Assembly and Senate that designated the governor to have the powers associated with addressing this pandemic. You may not like it, but it was done legally. And just because you don't like something doesn't mean you ignore it. If people don't like stopping at stop signs, they could say, I'm going to go through a stop sign because I don't like stopping at stop signs. But we have rules in place to protect the public, like you have to stop at a stop sign so that we don't have accidents where innocent bystanders or people in cars are killed. So just because the controller doesn't like the law, it means he has to still follow it. As I've said before, in a situation such as this, science trumps opinion. I don't care what your opinion is. I care what the facts are. And the facts, whether it's Dr. Fauci or Dr. Burstein, say we need to enforce rules to ensure that we have the best protocols in place to protect the public. And the opinion really doesn't matter.
So this gym owner in Hamburg was not made an example of then?
The gym owner was enforced with the fine that was then possible and payable under New York state rules. This was different than walking into a restaurant where someone, like a cook, didn't have their mask on. This was totally different. I will agree with that, because it was an attempt to basically say we are going to subvert the rules of New York State, and we have to protect the public. Sometimes we have to protect individuals even if they don't want to be protected. Channel 2, Ron Plants, are you still there?
Yes, Mark. Two quick questions. One on the budget. Number one, spoke to Joseph Lurigo, the minority caucus chairman. He had said, quote, we are trying to head off a property tax increase with an amendment. Would you still approve that budget if it includes a property tax increase? Is that true or not? And for the people who are affected economically right now, would you still go ahead and approve that budget?
Well, actually, the budget has a property tax cut. There's always levy growth. We've talked about this before. We talked about it in last year's campaign, where my opponent, then legislator Dixon, was criticizing for the levy growth, but she had previously talked about how she supported all the budgets because they cut the tax rate. The tax rate is cut. It's actually going to be the lowest tax rate that Erie County's had in nearly 30 years. And it's a good budget. It's a tight budget. It's a tough budget. Remember, there are layoffs in this budget. There are job cuts in this budget. Erie County is feeling pain. We have a responsibility to protect the public. I always find it interesting when those are out there. He talks about, or the legislators talk about, saying, oh, we're going to cut. But then they also talk about how more they're going to spend for the areas that they care about. This budget cuts the tax rate to the lowest it's been in at least 20 years. This budget was unanimously approved by the Erie County Fiscal Stability Authority, the control board, which actually gave us kudos for doing a very difficult budget in a tight year and a balanced budget. And I'd rather have the support of the Erie County Fiscal Stability Authority than to have one or two members of the minority caucus mad at me, because it's the Erie County Fiscal Stability Authority that determines whether what we're proposing makes sense, and they unanimously supported it.
And number two, just to follow up, Mark, on another question, vaccine distribution. Do you approve of Governor Cuomo's policy of having another advisory panel, a second layer of verification of the efficacy of the vaccine? Are you concerned at all that that could hold up distribution, because we're hearing Dr. Fauci and others saying the FDA knows what they're doing? Trust them.
I trust Dr. Fauci. The governor has said that whatever they're doing is going to be done at the same time as the FDA. I don't believe there would be any delay. There's no reason for a delay. I trust Dr. Fauci, and I hope the vast majority, I would hope every American trusts Dr. Fauci. He's as non-political as it gets. He's worked for Democrats and Republicans. He's been continually reappointed as head of the infectious disease control for the United States. I trust Dr. Fauci, And I know the governor has said there will be no delay. You can have a secondary panel, but as long as it's being done at the same time as the other one, I don't see a problem with it.
Isn't that sufficient, though? FDA, do the verification? I mean, well, I guess there are concerns. It could delay. If you have a separate panel looking at this, don't you trust the FDA?
Well, the only thing is, the only thing is, Ron, you're also talking about hypotheticals. The governor has said that this will not create a delay. So we'll have to leave it at that. Channel 4, any more questions? It's Chris Horvatis there, I think, too. If not, final question, we'll go to Madison Carter, if Madison's
Mark,
still there.
Hey, Mark, it's Chris. Sorry, it took me a minute to unmute. The governor, so he says December 15th, if everything goes okay, we'll have those doses for nursing homes. What have you been told, what has the state told you to expect to happen on December 15th? Are there going to be refrigerated trucks carrying this into nursing homes in Erie County on that day?
I don't know, because we've been under we've received information that the state will receive it on December 15th. I don't know if they then intend at this point to distribute it out. That is a date that is, I would not say is certain, because it also still requires FDA approval and then the immediate issuance of the vaccine. I don't know the transportation, where the vaccine would go. I assume, though I could be wrong, I always tell people in my office, don't assume anything, get the facts first. But it's likely that it would go to the Wadsworth lab in Albany first. If it's the Pfizer vaccine, it requires extra cold storage. If it's the Moderna vaccine, it requires moderate cold storage. We have identified sites in Erie County for both. Actually, Erie County is very lucky in that we have some number of sites that have extra cold storage capability, even cryogenic capability. So we are much better off than other places. I don't know if it's possible that we would receive the batches for other adjoining counties. I know that has been a discussion, because not all the other adjoining counties have the capability of doing the deep cold storage that's necessary. So we're going to, it's December 2nd. If they do receive it on December 15th, I guarantee you it's going to be very, very busy. Our staff has been working hard on putting together vaccine plans. I'm actually in the process of completing my thoughts with regards to having one individual a vaccine czar, just like the governor talked about. I've already talked to my staff for the last few days and talked to actually people outside about this, where I think we need to have someone who can help oversee the distribution of the vaccine, because there's a lot that goes into it. Once again, the reception of it, the storage of it, what you have to track the vaccines, the life of the vaccine. Certain vaccines only have a lifespan of a few days. Others can last for up to a month. Then, of course, most of these vaccines require two doses. So you have to track the individuals who received a dose and then contact them within the time period to say it's time for your second dose. This is going to be very complicated. And one other thing, too, that I think is very important to note, just because you get a vaccine on, let's say, December 15th, doesn't mean you're immune from COVID-19. You might need a second dose, and you're still going to have some time in between the first and second dose and when the second dose takes effect, in which you can build up your immunity. So I don't want people to think, hey, I got the shot, I'm fine, when it may take some time to build up immunity, if it was only a single shot. But if you needed two doses of it, it's going to take even more time, because it's basically a month between the first dose and the second dose in which you can receive it, so that you still would be at risk to catching COVID-19. And you think about it, if the first dose is, let's say, delivered, just use a hypothetical, on December 15th, and there's a second dose that's required and it's a 30-day period, the next dose can't be administered until January 15th. And at that point, then the person starts building up enough immunity to protect themselves. So this is going to be a very intensive process, a logistics, labor-intensive process, that is going to be one of the biggest operations that this community has ever seen. We're treating it as if it's a warlike endeavor, because we are at war. We're at war with the virus. Final question, Madison Carter.
Yeah, Mark, asking a question from my colleague, Ali Tui. You talk about the death numbers going up dramatically. We're hearing that the morgue over at Buffalo General is full, waiting for a cooler. Millard Fillmore also waiting for a cooler. Is there any truth to those rumors?
I can't talk about the particulars with the two hospitals you referenced because I don't know off the top of my head. I do know that there was increased deaths that were requiring additional storage. Erie County has a cold storage facility at our emergency operations center that we could implement. We have talked internally about putting in the more permanent type one that we had in the spring. We took it down, but we have the capability to put it back up, and I know the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services is working on that as we speak. I'd have to, with regards to the individual hospitals, I'd have to turn it over to them. The only thing I can tell you about is our medical examiner morgue, and I know our medical examiner morgue is not at capacity, though it's busy like others, unfortunately. And Dr. Burstein is
just
nodding
to clarify, you said at the beginning that there has been a need for additional storage.
Earlier this year in the spring, we had two cold storage facilities. Don't like talking about it, but they were cold storage trailers for bodies if there were overflow. We had them set up. We never got a body, which is good, because what happened downstate was absolutely horrible. What's happened in Texas, in the Great Plains, where they have trailer after trailer after trailer, is horrible. We're hoping we can avoid that here. That's why I just ask everyone to follow the protocols that are in place, because they're to protect everyone and cut down on the hospitalizations and cut down on the deaths. We're trying to prevent our hospitals from getting so inundated that the staff burns out. We're trying to stop as many deaths as possible. Sometimes there's things you have to be prepared for that you never want to be prepared for, but we will be prepared if necessary to store bodies in cold storage trailers if that's what it takes. I'm just hoping we don't have to do that. That is the final question. I want to thank all for their questions. We've gone a little over our time. I want to thank Kendra Schmidt for providing the American Sign Language from Deaf Access Services, the hardest working woman, with also Karen Gambino from Deaf Access Services, who are constantly providing it during our press conferences. And I just want to thank you all out there for everything you've done to protect our community during this very, very difficult time. We got a nice little respite in the summer. We got to enjoy our summer. There were still people catching COVID, but it was at a much, much lower rate. It's not summer anymore. We're indoors, and there's greater risk of transmission, and we're seeing it just because of all of the new cases that are resulting. If you don't believe me, listen to Dr. Fauci, listen to Dr. Burstein, listen to your own doctor, who's asking you to do what's right for the greater community, for your family. When you wear a mask, you're protecting yourself, but you're protecting other people, and maybe the person's life you save is your spouse, your parents, your grandparents, or for that matter, your child. Let's do what we can to protect the greater community. We are in a war against a virus that we can win, but it's gonna take some time. I was reading and just finished up the fireside chats from Franklin Roosevelt, and I just thought about how my grandfather's and grandmother's generation, my grandfather served in World War II, what they went through, not only fighting World War II overseas, but in the home front, the rations that they had to deal with, the issues that unfortunately broke up families for years, and the actions they had to take to protect our country, to protect our democracy. Well, we are in a war, not with a foreign power, but with a virus that none of us can see. It is a non-discriminatory virus. It doesn't care who you are, doesn't care the color of your skin, it doesn't care about the size of your bank account or where you live. We're seeing cases in the urban setting, in the rural setting, in the suburban settings. We're seeing cases among the rich and the poor. We need each and every one of you to come together as Americans to fight this so that we can all get through this. And then someday, decades from now, people will talk about us in the year we went through in 2020 and what will probably be early 2021, just like we talk about our grandparents and our parents' grandparents and the greatest generation that they were. Let's try to be the greatest generation for the people who look back at us from 60 years from now. Be safe and well, all. Take care.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.